everyone. I'm Jensine Bard, and welcome to Testimony, where truth is told, lives are changed, and hope is given. Revelation 12:11 tells us that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, a testimony of your story for His glory. What kind of a woman aborts her own baby? And why? Is it fear, selfishness, or just plain ignorance? Pressure from peers? Life gone wrong? Rape? Or is there a more sinister reason? What motivates an individual to kill another human being? Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to hear from a woman who not only made that decision, but owned and operated 4 abortion clinics, making thousands of these decisions every day, month, and year. Why? Would you welcome to Testimony, author of Blood Money, Getting Rich Off a Woman's Right to Choose, founder and president of the Heidi Group, and nationally acclaimed pro-life activist, and my honored guest, Miss Carol Everett. Carol, welcome to Testimony.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Carol, I know that was quite the introduction. I know it's right in your face, but we have to tell it like it is because that's exactly what you are getting ready to do on this testimony. I was riveted, shocked, and in tears, Carol, after watching your story, which has appeared on almost every major national television network and which is also chronicled in your book as well as your DVD series, Blood Money, The Business of Abortion, and Life After Abortion. Now, clearly, you are on a mission now to save lives, but that was not always the case. In part one of our 2-part conversation today, Carol, would you talk about what led you to that abortion clinic and what ultimately led you out? Carol, please tell us that story.
Well, I became involved in the abortion industry in a desperate attempt to justify my own abortion. I was told that abortion was supposed to solve my problems. I'd been pregnant before. I had 2 children. I knew it was a baby, but I wanted a way out, an easy way out. I had promised my second husband there would be no more children. I had agreed to have an abortion if I ever became pregnant, never expecting to become pregnant, and now that seemed to be the only choice. And when I had that abortion, the instant it was over and my head had some clarity, I knew I was a murderer. Now, I just want our people to think about that for just a moment. You know, none of us ever intend to murder. We don't ever think, I'll be sane someday, I should be headed to prison. Yet, deep in my soul, deep in my heart, I knew I deserved prison. And you can't share that with your mother or your best friend. So I left, and the world told me it was my choice, my right, yet deep in my heart, I continued to know it was wrong. But as I justified it by selling abortion to other women, in some sick, twisted way, every day, if she was all right, perhaps I was all right. And at first, it was just simple justification. But then, Jensine, it changed. I saw how much money there was in there. I wanted that money. And so I became involved in the abortion industry to sell abortions to other women so I could become a millionaire.
Now, Carol, tell us about the strategy that you went about to become a millionaire.
Well, the goal was to overcome every single objection and to sell the abortion. So we, first of all, went into schools because we knew that if we could get those kids sexually active, we could sell them 3 to 5 abortions between the ages of 13 and 18. That was our goal. And we had to break down the natural modesty. We had to separate children from their parents and their beliefs. And we had to become the experts in their lives. And you can't start doing that when they're 12. So you have to break down that natural modesty very, very early in kindergarten. And in kindergarten, we put the children in a circle. We went around the room, and we simply asked one question: what do your parents say to call your private parts? And you know and I know every family in the world has a different name for their private parts. So by the time we reached the 3rd or 4th child, it was clear to those children their parents did not know what they had. But we did, and we said, boys, this is what you have. The girls, this is what you have. Don't be ashamed of your private parts. And you could watch them out on the playground sharing We had accomplished our goal. We were becoming the experts. First, second, and third grade, the agenda is slightly different. It's actually intercourse. These children are not interested in intercourse, but we had small books, square books at that time. They're different now. But they were books with 6 and 7 year old nude bodies with diagrams to show them how to have intercourse. One book per classroom.
Wow.
Now, they don't use those books anymore. They have a new book for 2 year olds that they have just come out with, that's being widely promoted across the country, and I'm having great difficulty with it because I have to look at it. I can't remember anything about it. It's so bad. It's called Who Has What? All About Girls' Bodies and Boys' Bodies. And it's by the same writer, Robbie, R-O-B-I-E, Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, that does the other pornography for children. Then they have a book called It's So Amazing, It's Perfectly Normal. And then I forgot to tell you about the one for 4-year-olds, It's Not the Stork. If you will go check in your public libraries and in your schools, you'll be amazed what you find for sex education. In the 4th grade, the children are encouraged to masturbate alone until they're comfortable, and then in groups of 4 or 5 of the same sex. I'm not sure where they go with that lifestyle, but there it is.
Wow.
And then in the 5th and 6th grade, someone like me came in. This was my specialty. Now, all I had to do was get those kids to identify with the fact that their parents didn't understand them. And I'd start out by saying, how many of you are angry at your parents? Well, half the room would raise their head. How many of your parents don't understand you? All the hands go up. And so as soon as they were nodding with me, I had them. Your parents tell you not to have sex until you're married. Don't worry about that. Come to me. We can help you have safe sex or safer sex. Now, let's just stop for a minute. And when you hear someone say that, I think you can use one of those old Texas sayings. The next time someone tells you sex can be safe or safer outside of marriage, you say, you know, we don't take our kids out, get them really good and drunk, and try to teach them how to drive safely drunk. We give them a moral absolute, don't drink and drive. Why in the world would we give our youth, our children, this low moral standard to live down to rather than the very highest and best, abstinence until marriage, which quite simply works every single time?
Right.
But we didn't say that, and we would encourage the children to come in to see us the next day in our clinic. When they came to see us, we would give them, the girls, a low-dose birth control pill that, in order to provide any level of protection, had to be taken accurately at the same time every day, for we knew full well there's not a teenager in the world that does anything at the same time every day. We could look at the statistics and tell that any time she went on any method of contraception, that sexual activity increased from 0 once a week to 5 to 7 times a week. That pill would not work, and when she was pregnant, she'd come back to us, and we were ready.
Well, Carol, how many abortions were you performing on a daily basis, and how did you do that?
Well, it's different day by day, but our goal was 125 a week. Saturday is obviously the busiest day, Friday's the second busiest day, and Wednesday's the second busiest day. And so we would book 2 to 3 abortionists depending on the number we had for that day. We had a couple we could call any time, and we brought the patients in an hour before the doctor so we could keep the doctors doing 10 to 12 abortions an hour in the first trimester, and then in the second and third trimester, they would do about 3 an hour.
Wow. Now, you had a life-altering experience that took you out of that industry. Can you talk about that in our few remaining moments? And then in our next segment, I want to be more specific about how Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry seduces young teenagers into making this most horrific decision.
Well, I was struggling. We were watching one woman a month either have a hysterectomy, a colostomy, and one woman died. And as I struggled with that, actually, we were expanding so I could become a millionaire. My commission was $25 per abortion. I had to do 40,000 abortions a year in order to accomplish that. So with that in mind, we looked for someone who could solve the internal problems, because everyone inside the abortion clinic fights, and we needed to solve the internal problems. And this man was very strange. He just said we needed to meet with him an hour a week for 4 weeks. The partners actually needed to meet with him, and we agreed to do that. Started meeting with him. The second time I met with him, he was such a strange man. I started interviewing him. He didn't drink, he didn't cuss, he didn't run around on his wife, and I finally said, are you a preacher?
Right.
And he said, yes. And I said, what in the world are you doing in this situation? He said, God sent me, and I knew the man was crazy. And I told him quickly, you know, I am a Christian. I have a Bible in the top right-hand drawer of my desk in that abortion clinic. I want you to know I pray every day. I didn't tell him I prayed none of those women would die, and I prayed there'd be a lot of abortions today. But when I told that man that I tithed on all that money and he was not impressed, I had a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that I was in trouble.
Wow.
And then he just laid out the plan of salvation and said, God loves you. He knows you can't be good enough. You can't work hard enough, Carol. You can't buy your way to heaven. But because he loves you so much, he made a way of escape for you by sending his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for your sins. And by this simple act of faith in Jesus Christ as your Savior and Lord, your life can change. And then he asked me if I wanted to pray that prayer and ask Jesus Christ in my life. And Jensine, I honestly prayed that prayer to shut the man up. But he is the king of the word prayer. And we prayed that prayer, and I went back in that abortion clinic, and they were not dancing in the front door. They were coming in that door crying, and I'd never seen that before. And I started speaking to each of them, talking to them, and saying, why are you crying? And before, I would have taken that fear, amplified it, and sold them an abortion. And now I started saying, you don't have to have an abortion. Your parents will not kill you. Your parents love you. And I started helping them choose life. And at the end of that day, rather than saying, isn't this great, we saved three babies today, I was saying I lost $75. And in that confusion, I fell to my knees and prayed a heart prayer, Lord, if there is a Lord, if this is not where you want me, hit me over the head with a 2x4. And the 2x4 was swift. We were caught attempting to do abortions on women who were not pregnant. And they did an expose that aired 27 days after that pastor said to me that someone would be leaving in 30 days. And all I knew was it was me. And I walked out July the 27th, 1983.
And that someone was you. And during your course in the abortion clinic, this is a horrific statistic, Carol, but we need to let our listeners know. How many people were you responsible for having aborted their babies?
We saw over 35,000 abortions during that time.
Wow. Well, Carol, this can't be an easy subject to talk about, no matter how long it's been since that time. And you are obviously a born-again, spirit-filled Christian doing a tremendous work. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Carol Everett, founder and president of the Heidi Group. She is one of the most prolific pro-life activists in our country today. A movie called BloodMoneyFilm.com is available on DVD. Her book, Blood Money, Getting Rich Off a Woman's Right to Choose, was a national bestseller. We're going to hear more from Carol next week in our second segment on testimony, more about what you're not hearing in the liberal media and even in the conservative media. People seem to not want to touch this issue. I don't understand it, and that's why we have Carol with us today to help bring clarity and understanding to what really is murder and genocide in our nation today. Ladies and gentlemen, Carol Everett. Carol, thank you for being with us. God bless you, and we look forward to hearing from you next week on Testimony.
Thank you. God bless you for what you do.
If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, JensineBard.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony.
Last week, you heard the horrific story of one woman's journey from the abortion clinic to the pro-life movement. She owned and operated four of them, making money hand over fist with little regard for innocent lives being disposed of, one being her own. She would regret that decision, as chronicled in her book, Blood Money, Getting Rich Off a Woman's Right to Choose. and become one of the nation's most formidable pro-life activists, founding the Heidi Group, named after the daughter she would never see this side of heaven, and offering expert testimony in our courts, 33 state legislatures, and in Congress. Here to share more of her story and what really the abortion industry is all about, and what every woman, man, and child isn't told, is founder and president of the Heidi Group, author, speaker, and my honored guest and friend, Miss Carol Everett. Carol, welcome back to Testimony.
Thank you, Jensine. It's great to be with you again.
Well, it's great to have you. It's an honor. Carol, there are some facts that we are not hearing in the media and arguably have never heard. And as the word says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. Carol, you are doing all that you can to help change that. So for this segment of your story, would you take our listeners now behind the walls of an abortion clinic, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood, what their strategy is, and what your strategy is to defeat them and the government that supports their agenda. Carol, please tell us more.
Well, Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in the nation, and their agenda is changing slightly. Obviously, abortion is their business, but they are in the business of using federal funds, government dollars, our tax dollars, for family planning. And their family planning is precisely what we used. It was the low-dose birth control pill we knew the girl would get pregnant on. And then the other thing that we really need to talk about are condoms. Now, we all hear about how condoms will do this and condoms will do that, but Planned Parenthood does not buy the most expensive condoms. They buy defective or seconds, and that's been proven here in Texas. Actually, they buy seconds or defective condoms that will not work by the time the young man uses them. And, of course, condoms are heat and cold sensitive. They put them in their back pocket. It's affected every time he sits down, every time he stands up. So they're passing out defective birth control pills to the girls that need to be taken accurately at the same time every day in order to provide any level of protection. And girls, teen girls, and even adult girls rarely do anything at the same time every day. So they don't take the pills accurately. The sexual activity increases, and they become pregnant. If Obamacare is not overturned, they are getting ready to do comprehensive and primary care in these large mega clinics that they're opening all over the nation, so they'll get even more of our tax dollars. And the sad thing is the women will get a lower standard of medical care, because the only time you see a real physician in a Planned Parenthood facility is when you have an abortion. They use mid-level providers, never use a doctor to do family planning care or medical care for a woman. And they say they do breast cancer screening, yet that mid-level provider is doing a manual exam. And the first Planned Parenthood in the entire nation to get a mammogram machine is in Arizona right now, in process of doing it before September. They've never had a mammogram machine in a Planned Parenthood before. So that's even a lie, because we know real breast cancer screening includes a mammogram.
Wow.
They're taking our tax dollars and lying to us about what they're doing with it.
Now, in part of your testimony, they called you the closer. When all else failed, they brought in Carol Everett to close the girl, to convince her to having an abortion. Can you talk about that and the seductive ways that they change the mind of a girl, even if she's not pregnant?
Well, she thinks she's pregnant, so that's enough. It costs as much to get her in if she's not pregnant as it does if she is pregnant. And so, of course, we wanted to scare her. And so we knew fear was the great motivator. We knew that every girl was coming with at least one fear. And so one of our goals was to quickly identify that fear, to use it to overcome every single objection. Anytime she moved away, we'd say, your parents will know if you do this. If you don't have this abortion, your parents will know. This will hurt your parents. Your parents will kill you. You find that fear and move forward with it, even if she's older. If you're not sure this is your husband's baby, you certainly don't want to have this baby. What if it's not his? And on and on and on. You find the fear, and you use it. And you close it by identifying that fear, scaring that girl to death that someone will hate her or hurt her if she has goes forward with this pregnancy.
So really what you are doing is marketing abortion on demand.
Marketing abortions to women who didn't even not even really want them, and some who were not even pregnant and didn't need them.
What are some of the things, Carol, that happened while you were working and operating those four abortion clinics in Texas?
Well, one out of every 500 women in the last 18 months had a hysterectomy, a colostomy, and one woman died. She bled to death. The ginseng, we were careful to get her out of the clinic before she died so we could always say we'd never had a death there. And when there was a complication, we took them across town in my car because an ambulance is terrible publicity in front of an abortion clinic. We did not take them to the closest hospital or to the hospital that would take the best care of that woman. We took them to the hospital that would help us in our cover-up. We never had a lawsuit. There's a shame involved, and this woman has just either died and her family doesn't want to deal with it, or she's just had a colostomy as a result of having her bowel injured during the abortion, and here she is with a colostomy and a big hospital bill and all sorts of other things, and she doesn't call the attorneys. She's shamed. She doesn't want anyone to know what happened, so the abortion clinics get away with it.
She doesn't even call her doctor. That's why she goes to the abortion clinic. On your DVD series, bloodmoneyfilm.com, which I watched in horror, they really get into the details of what goes on in these abortion clinics. They can't do enough per hour. They don't clean their instruments. The women are cajoled in there, but as soon as the abortion is done, they are discarded like a sack of potatoes. Don't call me. I don't want to know you. Is that right?
Yes, they're thrown out the back door. Let's talk about instruments. If you have two or three abortionists wanting to do 10 to 12 abortions an hour, and you have 21 sets of instruments, you're going to make it less than an hour with those three abortionists. And then you've got to get those instruments in. And if you're going to do them properly, you wash the instruments, you put them in a sterilization container, you put them in the sterilizer, you bring the temperature up, and you leave it there for 20 minutes, and then you cool them. You don't have time for that on a busy day with two to three abortionists working. So you just wash as much as you can off the abortion instruments, and you get them back in there, and then you never change the hoses. That costs too much money. They're supposed to be disposable, one use per woman. We use the same ones all the time and clean them out at the baby's body parts at the end of the day so we could reuse them the next day.
My God, my God. In your other DVD series, Carol, Life After Abortion, these women talk about being suicidal, having multiple abortions, becoming promiscuous. They are told that in 10 minutes it'll be over, don't worry about it. But this is something, when a woman does, it lasts a lifetime. I was horrified to hear about a 12-year-old that came into your abortion clinic. Tell us about that.
She came dancing in with her dad and chewing her gum. And, you know, I don't really know what happened to her between the first time and when she came back for her checkup. But when she came back for her checkup, she came in, big bubble gum, piece of bubble gum in her mouth. We went into the room with her, did the checkup, closed the door and told her to get dressed and come out. She didn't ever come out. We were worried about her. Finally, I knocked on the door, and she had brought a piece of glass in and had slit her wrist in the room where we'd done her checkup, where her abortion was probably done.
Oh, my God. And also, Carol, I know that Planned Parenthood is very strategic in where they place their facilities, right across from high schools. Can you talk about that?
Well, Planned Parenthood started out with a eugenics policy to rid the nation of those that Margaret Sanger thought were not good for society, the weeds of society, as she called them, and strategically placed them in black areas. And then in 1984, they started targeting Hispanic areas, and now they're working to the American Indians. But they always are in low-income areas across the street from high schools, easily accessible, because how do you get those girls pregnant if you're not accessible, and how do you do the abortions? And then, of course, now they're moving into middle-income areas and spreading out as they plan to get ready for comprehensive and primary care.
And you know what was interesting to me in watching the DVD series is originally Margaret Sanger had called her organization, quote, American Birth Control League, but they changed the name of it because they thought the word control was a little too harsh. But isn't that exactly what Planned Parenthood seeks to do?
Absolutely. It's worse than control. It's coercion.
In your DVD series, Carol, and ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Carol Everett, founder and president of the Heidi Group, a pro-life activist group that is nationwide in its efforts to stop abortion, based out of Texas. Carol Everett is the founder and president. She had an abortion. She has since repented and received Jesus as her Lord and Savior, and now she is one of America's most staunch advocate against the crime of abortion. Carol, in our remaining moments, can you tell us what the Heidi Group is doing, what we can do to come alongside of you? And I just have a simple question. Why have we not been able to overturn Roe versus Wade?
That's a very interesting question. One of the things that I think we need to be so concerned about, particularly in this next election cycle, are Supreme Court justices. Because now, in the last 3 years, we've had two very liberal judges who would uphold Roe again placed on the court. And we need some more judges that will stand for truth, because Roe v. Wade should never have become law. But out of Texas, this last, the legislature just completely defunded Planned Parenthood, $30 million a year out of their pockets, and they filed a lawsuit saying, of course, that they need federal funds, but also they have asserted a right, a corporate right to freedom of speech to promote abortion in their family planning clinics. And Jensine, that is headed for the Supreme Court, and more than anything, we need lower federal court justices and Supreme Court justices who will stand for truth and overturn Roe v. Wade and will not give Planned Parenthood the right to use tax dollars to promote abortion. Scripturally, I think it's the beginning of the end if we don't, and we will never have another revival. And I think the way we overcome it is for Christians to vote. We've got to stand up. We've got to tell the truth. And I'm telling you this personally because I'm stepping away from the C3 to do this. We've got to stand for truth, because today we have a moral man and what I believe to be an immoral man, and we've got to stand for the moral man and let God do the rest. But we've got to vote.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Carol Everett, founder and president of the Heidi Group, a pro-life organization dedicated to stopping abortion and genocide in this country. You can learn more about Carol's ministry by going to www.theheidigroup.org and pick up her DVD, bloodmoneyfilm.com. Need education, need information, this is where you need to go. Carol, thank you so much for being with us today on Testimony, and God bless you for everything you're doing to help save lives.
Well, thank you, Jensine, and thank you for what you do. May the Lord bless you.
If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, JensineBard.com, or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony.